Okay, so this is the third part of our series on Iyov. Before we begin, a couple of brief things related to what we've said in the past that I wanted to follow up on. First of all, 2 weeks ago, Rachel asked who wrote Iyov, so I wanted to follow up on that. I said Moshe, and I said I think Shlomo is given as another opinion in the Gemara. I was half right. The answer is Moshe. The Gemara in Bava Basra, one page before our Gemara, says that Moshe wrote it. Our Gemara was on Tesavav above Basra, so on Yudalad above Basra, the Gemara says Moshe, which actually gets into this whole discussion as to when he lived. Obviously, if Moshe wrote it, that would have repercussions for when Iyov lived. But I now included that, so that's source now 3b, for those who are following online, on page 5. So you can see that, source 3b, those who are listening online. Okay, another quick thing before we get going. I mentioned a story about Rav Soloveitchik last week. His brother's name, the chemistry professor, was named Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik. I remembered it right after class, blinked on that. But his name was Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik. Of course, his Rosh Hashiva brother was Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. And he had a chemistry professor brother named Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik. He had two sisters also. And that is the Soloveitchik family. Okay, one other thing before we begin, a more text-based point to make. That's something I just saw the other day that related to what we said last week, so I thought I would share this. It's actually a Malbim in Daniel. So I was just happened to be learning the Malbim in Sefer Daniel on Shabbos, and I came across this, and I thought I would share it. So Daniel, for those who haven't learned, at the beginning of Sefer Daniel, is about the siege that Nebuchadnezzar lays on Yerushalayim. That's where the book starts. And he captures a number of young men, particularly smart and well-educated men, boys, I should say, not really men. He captures young men, boys, and he forces them to eat non-kosher food. A number of them, Daniel and three of his friends, refuse, and they get in trouble. There's a whole story. I won't go through the whole thing. You can read it yourself, Daniel Perek Aleph. But interesting pasuk that caught my eye says v'hayiladim ha'ela arbatam, and these boys, the four of them, nasan lehem ha'elohim mada v'haskel v'chol sefer v'chachma. All four boys received all measure of wisdom and knowledge and understanding in any type of sphere and any academic sphere. V'chol sefer v'chachma v'Daniel, and Daniel, who was one of the four, who is our main subject in the book of Daniel, havin v'chol chazon v'chalomos. He went further. He even understood every vision and every dream, which will come up later in the book when he interprets Nebuchadnezzar's dreams. Interesting Malbim on this. Sounds a lot like the more Nebuchim we had last week. The Malbim says, v'hayiladim, says the Malbim, this is Perek Aleph of Daniel, Pasuk Yitzayin in Malbim, says, k'fi hachanasam, based on how prepared they were, kain, so too, chol alea mashefa ha'elohis. To that measure did the heavenly bounty come upon them. Shahayiladim arbata, because the four boys, shahushvu, v'prishus, all of whom separated themselves from eating forbidden foods. Cain, who shubimad of a haskel. So Hashem equated them as well in giving them a tremendous amount of wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Yoser al hayiladim, more so than the other boys, shahisgal umipas bagamelech, who did, in fact, benefit and partake of the non kosher food of the king. V'Daniel, and Daniel she'ala aleha b'mesiras nefesh, that he went even further, he had more mesiras nefesh, more self-sacrifice, zacha l'ruach Elohim kedoshim, he even got ruach HaKodesh, he became a Navi, as the book goes on to explain, and as that puzzle goes on to explain. So why were the four boys, all of them separated as far as becoming very wise, more so than the other boys who were at the king? Because they separated themselves. And why was Daniel even above the other three? Sheshai and who were the other three? Let's see if I can find it. The three other boys, Azariah and I can't find it right now. And why was Daniel over the rest of the other four? Because, as Malbim, he separated himself even further. The more they separated themselves, the more Hashem separated them, and the more he gave them from his from his heavenly bounty. The more he protected them, the more he watched over them, and that does seem to be similar to what we saw in the Mor Nebuchadnezzar last week, as far as the more a person separates themselves, the more they will be protected by Hashem. The more they study, the more they try, the more they cling to Hashem, the more Hashem will watch over them and cling to them. That, as we said, to get back into our learning, that, as we said, is the ideal. And we said, I would love to live in that world, but it seems difficult to see that in the world around us. It seems difficult to see that we're living in a world where Hashem's bounty is more plentiful upon people who do more good things. It seems almost to be random, or maybe even to be, I don't want to say the opposite, but it seems to be random, let's say. It seems to be that it's, you know, some good people get good things and some bad people get bad things. And that becomes the question of the book that we're learning now, of Eov. And we started the first answer, which is the answer of Eliphaz, of Eov's first friend. But we did say, and I'll repeat again, that hashgacha, that we would, might think, well, that means getting lots of good stuff, doesn't necessarily mean that. When Rambam and Or Nevuchim that we saw talks about a higher level of hashgacha, of being watched, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to get, this Navi or Tzaddik is going to necessarily get more good stuff. Excuse me, it means he's going to be more watched, he's going to be more protected, but for one of the four reasons that we'll see now, and for each one we'll have to answer back into the Mor Nevuchim, and we will, but for one of four reasons that we'll discuss throughout the rest of the series, it might not be that just because you're being watched necessarily means that you are getting lots of good stuff. And we already gave one answer to that, which is on a very human level. Just because you, you know, you might be stricter on your own child who is disrespectful to you than you are on someone else's child who's disrespectful to you. We didn't give that example, but that's a good example. Right? In other words, your child is disrespectful to you, you might send them to the room or discipline them in a harsher way. Someone else's kid is rude to you, so you say, it wasn't so nice. You know, you're not as concerned about someone else's child. The fact that, or you might even tell your child, he's not my child, I don't care what he does. I don't care how the other kids did on the test. Right? The fact that you care more about your kid means you're going to have a higher level of expectation. So the fact that this Navi Yer Tzadik has warranted Hashem's watching him in a more careful, guided way, and in other words, he has more hashgacha, therefore, consistent with that, concomitant with that, he's also going to possibly be watched more and not necessarily feel as good about himself. But it comes from a good place, right? As opposed to the child you don't like as much and you just ignore them, you don't care, right? Maybe at first they feel good about that. They feel happy that they don't have as many expectations, as heightened expectations, but after a while they don't really prefer that. After a while, you know, they found in tests, they found in studies that children who are neglected and therefore able to do anything they want, they can stay out as late as they want, eat all the junk food they want, actually don't really, as you might imagine, they don't, after a while, they don't prefer that. They would almost prefer to have the discipline of children in other families who aren't in their own family, who have more discipline. And maybe that's something that we're going to see here as well, in particular today, about Nisayon. Okay, so we started looking at at Eliphaz himself, beginning of Perek, Dalid, Ivayan, Eliphaz, Anisa, Devar, Lachatila, Vatsur, Bemilin, Meyuchal. A person should be able to handle the tests that they're given by Hashem. Hashem gives us tests in order to be able to protect us, in order to be able to, in order to be able to take care of us. It's really, as we just said, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It could be a good thing if I give someone a test. But at the same time, we have to answer a couple of important questions about tests, which is, if I already know, and we asked this at the end of last week, if I already know exactly how someone is going to do on the test, there's really no reason for me to give the test. If I have some way of knowing by some other measure that they're going to get 100, I know they know everything, why would I give them the test? So we'll need to answer that. What's the point of the test? And number two, we have to understand what's gained by this test altogether. Even if someone learns something, what larger gain is there in this test? What's accomplished by this test? What's it? So who's it for? Is number one, who's this test for? And number two, what's really gained in the long run? Okay. So we're going to see two perspectives. These are not the only two perspectives. But these are two perspectives on Nisayon. And as I said last week, whenever you're dealing with Nisayon, you have to go back to the Nisayon of all Nisayonot. And that, of course, is Akedat Yitzchak. Avraham waited almost 100 years to have Yitzchak. Finally, he has Yitzchak, the son that he loves, the son that he has davened for and prayed for, the one that he knows is going to continue the Jewish people, Klal Yisrael, forever. And then Hashem tells him, of course, to bring him up to a mountain and bind him. Quite a Nisayon, and Hashem even refers to it as a Nisayon. Elohim Nisayas Avraham. Excuse me. God tested Avraham, it's very clear. One of the few places we have where it's really referred to as a Nisayon, right there, black on white. There are other places we know from Midrashim, our Nisayonot, we know from Gemaras, but this is pretty black on white. So let's look at a Ramban first, and then we'll look at a Rabbeinu Bachya. Two perspectives on who a Nisayon is for. That when Hashem gives you a Nisayon, who exactly is supposed to be learning from it? No one's going to say, just to clue you in, no one is going to say that Hashem learned anything from it, because Hashem knows what's going to happen anyway. He knows the future. How that works with Bechira, we won't get into now. Of course, that's a whole different topic. But who exactly is learning anything? Who's supposed to learn something from the Nisayon that's being given? So we'll see Ramban, which is, if you're following online, source 11, on page 8. And then we'll see Rabbeinu Bachya, which is source 12. Source 11 and 12 on page 8. Okay. So there, in order to do the Ramban, we have to learn two terms, and we have to make sure we know these terms, because it will be confusing otherwise. The first term is the Minnaseh, and the second is the Minuseh. And if you know Hebrew, the Minnaseh is the one who's giving the test, and the Minuseh is the one who's being tested. So let's make sure we know those terms. The Minnaseh is the one testing, and the Minuseh is the one being tested. So let's look at this Ramban. Inyan HaNisayon Hu, the idea of a test is the following. Lada'ati, to my understanding, says the Ramban, in my opinion. Ba'avur heyos ma'isei ha'adam, since after all, v'shut mu'chlata piro, since after all, the actions are already decided anyway what a person's going to do, so he's building the question to be stronger. Sorry, let me see that again. Bavur hayos ma'isei ha'adam reshus mechletas biyado im yirtze ya'aseh v'im lo yirtze lo ya'aseh. Yikre nisayon. So if, after all, a person can do anything he wants, and if, since after all, we have what we call bechira chafshis, we have free will to do anything we want, so then he's building the question to be stronger. As I said, what exactly is the point of the test? If Hashem is giving me a test in order to prove something to anybody, and I go ahead and fail it, then he hasn't proven it. So in a sense, you could say, so to speak, Hashem was, incorrect, in, so to speak, in giving the test, because here he gave the test to prove A, and you went and did B. So he wants to say, that's a fascinating possibility the Ramban has here, that Bechira, since I have free will, as Ramban is assuming, a test is meant to prove something to somebody, then you haven't accomplished anything by giving me the test, because I could just prove the other way, right? If I was giving a test because I knew that my student was an A student and I wanted to show the principal how much he knows, or show his parents how much he knows, and then the kid went and failed it, I would have proven nothing. So Ramban points out that so far he's proven nothing, because the guy can just go and do the opposite anyway, so who cares? So therefore, says the Ramban, Yikra Nisayon, it's only called Nisayon, a test, Mitzad HaMinuseh. He says, yeah, but it's only called a test from the perspective of the one being tested. That's the person who it's a test for. Aval HaMinaseh, but the tester, which is Hashem, Yisbarach, the right, Hashem, the tester, Yitzaveh Bo, commands that test, Lohotzi HaDavar Min HaKoach El HaPoel. In order to actualize potential, in order to take things from the possibility that they're true to the actuality that they're true in real life. Lios lo schar maisei tov, in order to give this person reward for a good action, lo schar lev tov bilvad. Because until now, he's had the potential to be a great person, but he's never had he's never had it in him to actually, he's never had the opportunity to really show it, right? A person could have it in him to be a great mountain climber, but if he never gets the chance to go to a mountain, if he lives in the big city his whole life, and he never has the money or the capability or the desire or some reason to go to a big mountain, he's never going to be a mountain climber. He might be a great mountain climber in theory. He might have meant to be. He might have been meant to be a great mountain climber. Maybe Hashem made him to be a great mountain climber. But in real life, he's not a mountain climber. So all of his ideas are for naught. Right? Learning driving in a classroom is obviously pointless. There's no point. You don't know how good a driver you are until you get behind the wheel and drive. And over here, he's giving this person a chance to climb that mountain. He's saying, here, I know what you can do. Hashem knows anyway what you can do. Your Bechira won't change what Hashem knew or didn't know, because the way Ramban seems to understand it, which is a little difficult, and he says this in other places as well, that the way you get around the problem of Bechira versus Hashem's Yediyah, free will versus and divine foreknowledge, Ramban wants to say, he seems to be saying that it's only a question for Hashem. Meaning that Hashem himself, when you end up doing something, that's exactly what Hashem knew the whole time. So your Bechira won't change what he did. So what difference does it make, says the Ramban? That was his question to begin with. But he says no, because that's only a question if the person you're trying to prove it to, not person, if the one you're trying to prove it to is Hashem. But if you're trying to prove it to yourself, if Hashem is trying to prove it to you, then it makes sense. So you're trying to get mais schar maise tov lo schar lev tov bilvad. There is something called schar lev tov, by the way. There's an interesting axillary point that comes out from this Ramban, that there is something called schar lev tov, that, you know, in theory you could have, it is something to have learned all of you need to know about a subject, but until you go out there and really practice it, until you get into the lab or onto the mountain, it's really pointless. Vida, and he says you should know, Ki Hashem Tzadik Yivchan. And we'll see this pasuk used a different way by Rabbeinu Bachya later. Hashem Tzadik Yivchan. Hashem only tests tzadikim. He only tests righteous people. Kishuhu yodeyak b'tzadik. Second to last line of the Ramban. Kishuhu yodeyak b'tzadik sheyase ritzono v'chaf eitz lastiko. He only gives a test to a person who he knows is a tzaddik, and who he knows will do his will and do the right thing. Yitzave osobi yisem. That's the person he gives a test to. V'lo yivchan aser rishayim, asher lo yishmon. He won't test wicked people who won't listen anyway. V'hinei kol hanisyonos, and all of the tests, he finishes by saying, Shabbat Torah, in the Torah at least, letovas ha-min nuseh, are for the benefit of the one being tested. It won't change anything from Hashem's perspective, because whatever you do will be what he knew you were going to do to begin with, as we said a minute ago. But what will change is what you know about yourself. I might know the student is capable, but I give the test, says the Ramban, I give a test to my student in order to prove to him what he knows. I know he's an A student, but he has to do something to prove it. Constantly acting in a good way, studying, won't actually get him the points. You have to put your money where your mouth is. Take the test and show me, and that matters much more. A team could practice for months on end, but unless they get on the court and win a few games, no one's going to believe they're good. You believe they have potential to be good. If you read the previews before every season, football or basketball or baseball, you can read about how this team's going to win, and that team's going to win. But at the end of the day, if they don't get on the court and suit up, then they will never be the World Series team that they want to be. Okay, so Ramban wants to say that it is for the benefit of the one being tested. He himself needs to learn. That's important for the growth of this person. And Ramban says as well that he wouldn't give this test. Hashem wouldn't give this test unless he knew you could pass it, because, again, as he pointed out at the beginning, he won't be proving anything that way. All right, if I give it to someone who's not going to listen, then, again, I haven't proven anything. If I want to prove that you're a great student, and that if my whole point in giving you the test is to prove to you, as I already know, that you are a great student, I already know it and I want you to know it, and then I better be pretty sure you're going to do well. Because if you don't, I'm going to be worse off than I was to begin with. All right, I better be pretty sure you're going to do well on this, because if not, right, if the student says, oh, I'm not such a good student, and I say, yeah, sure you are, here, take this test, and then he does badly, then I've just been sacked, right? There's no point. I better be pretty sure he's going to do well. Maybe by making it easier, or maybe by rigging it a little bit, I don't know. But I better be pretty sure he does well on that test, or else I'm only going to be confirming his thought that he had to begin with, that he wasn't good. So maybe that's what Ramban is getting at by saying he only tests tzaddikim. He wouldn't test the Rasha, because what's the point? The Rasha is only going to use that as a way of saying, see, I'm nothing. Right? I'm not, Rasha lacks confidence. Why would somebody be a Rasha? Let's divert for a second. The Gemara says that nobody sins unless a ruach shtus, unless a foolish, and a spirit of folly comes into him. Nobody sins. I mean, we all sin, but whenever somebody sins, it's only because they're being silly. Right? If a person knew, if a person was able to think for real what life was like, of course they wouldn't sin. That's what the Gemara assumes. So why would somebody be a Rasha? A person's a Rasha because they lack the confidence that they can be a tzaddik. Right? Why? I'm a very bad athlete. Right? I'm a very poor athlete. So I lack confidence. So I have no interest in going out on the court. So why would a Rasha be a Rasha? I assume a person's a Rasha because they lack the confidence that they can be a tzaddik. If a person knew they could be a tzaddik, so then they would be... Excuse me. If a person knew they could be a tzaddik, then they would be a tzaddik, but a person doesn't see that, doesn't think so. And we're all that way to some extent, more or less. Some of us more so, some of us less so. But being a tzaddik means having confidence that you could be a tzaddik. So that's what Ramban is getting at as well. That a person who has the confidence to believe that they're a tzaddik, that they can pass the test, will take the test that they're being given and use it for the right reasons and pass it. And that's why Hashem gives a test to that person. But a Rasha is like my student in the example a minute ago, who is just going to say, I don't know anything, I can't do it. And then when I give them the test, they fail, because they had no confidence, and they were only trying to prove to me that they couldn't do it. As opposed to the tzaddik student, who wants to prove to me that they can do it. Okay, so that's the Ramban's perspective. Ramban wants this to be a test, all tests. We assume we can plug this back into Yov as well, that a test is really for the benefit of the one being tested. Let's look at the Rabbeinu Bachya. We have in Source 12, page 8. And he changes this a little bit. He says, V'alohim nisa'as Avraham, zoi parshas akeda, sharei sabatuchim, ve'ein nisa'i, on second line, chas v'shalom, etzal Hashem, yisbarach. Excuse me. And Yisayon is not, God forbid, and Yisayon for Hashem. Hashem already knows everything, as we said. Ela itol habrios. Really, it's for the brios. It's for everybody, not just, right? Ramban wanted it out to be for the minusa, the one being tested. He says, no, it's for everybody, all of mankind. Excuse me. Lahudia, to publicize. Godel mailas et tzadik o'anabi, to let people know what a tzadik this fellow is, what a Navi this fellow is. V'chein amar akasu, this will sound familiar, Hashem tzadik yivchan, Hashem only tests a tzadik. Meaning he wouldn't do it to a Rasha, because he wouldn't want everyone to know what a tzadik this Rasha is, right? What's the reason he wouldn't give a test to a Rasha? According to Rabbeinu Bachya, it's because if the guy passes it, he looks bad anyway. Hashem, so to speak, would look bad anyway. Because now this Rasha is parading as a tzadik. Now this Rasha is running around having passed one test, and suddenly he's heralded as being a tzaddik. So Hashem wouldn't do that. Hashem would only test a tzaddik, which is someone who not only will pass the test, maybe the Rasha would too, but we want to pass the test. Someone who we actually want to. It's like you wouldn't encourage someone to apply for your position if you didn't want them to have the position. Because if they pass, if they end up getting the job, you won't be happy. So why in the world would you put them into that position, put yourself into that position? Right? You're only going to ask them to apply if you want them to do it if they get the job. Okay. Umasha minu nismicha akeda. Why? He goes on, interesting point here. Why is the Parsha of Akedah connected to the Parsha of Avimelech? Avimelech was the king of Gerar, and he took Sarah, and then they davened for him, and he gave Sarah back, and the whole thing with Avram and Sarah, his sister, is he his wife? Is she his wife? So anyway, he says the Medrash, Nisa, the word Nisa, Lashon Za'af, it comes from the Lashon of anger. Za'afim, Nisisim. Is that connected Masha Hich East, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Because Hashem, of course, was angry. V'shevach v'aso sh'nosan l'avi melech. She'kenegdan nenshu banov she'yeshev aron habris v'stei plishtim shiva chadashim. So there's a certain amount of anger that actually comes from this, which is very interesting. The exact point here is not totally relevant for us, but the word nisayon, he says, actually there is a certain amount of anger in it, which we have to think about too, something to think about. But maybe anger, not necessarily against the menusas, to use Ramban's term, but maybe anger against everyone else that need to be shown who this person is. Maybe the anger is not directed at the menusas, but it's directed at the brios, as Rabbeinu Bachi put it, the brios, everyone else who hasn't reached that level yet. So maybe I give a test. So let's put it back into the classroom, as I always do. Maybe the analogy would be that I'd give a test to one student to show everyone else, look what you can do. See, your classmate over there is capable of getting 100. What's wrong with all of you? Why are all of you not capable of doing better? Educationally, we could question whether that's the best approach. But maybe that's what maybe that's what's being done in terms of a nisayon. Right, Masha Nismicho. He says it's a lashon of anger, that there's something that he wants to prove to everyone else, to say, here, look, see, your friend Avraham over here was able to put his son on the altar. What's wrong with all of you? Why don't all of you give something up to me as well? And maybe that's why, again, that's why he would only prove his point by giving it to the tzaddik. First of all, because even if the Rasha passes the test, to go back a second, even if the Rasha happens to pass the test, that won't prove anything because he's still basically a Rasha. So Hashem will just, so to speak, not be proving what he wants to prove, let's say. He won't be proving anything because, okay, so the guy's still a Rasha, he just happened to pass one test. It won't be proving anything, it's pointless. And number two, won't prove anything to everyone else because, yeah, okay, that guy was able to pass that test, but he's still a Rasha. So there's a certain amount of anger. It comes from Hashem's being upset at everybody else for their lack of commitment to Hashem, their lack of willingness to sacrifice for Hashem, whatever it might be. But for one reason or another, again, that won't be proven if he gives the same test to a Rasha who passes it, because the whole point is to say that here this tzaddik did it, not this Rasha. Although you could say, well, maybe it's the opposite here. If even the Rasha passed it, of course you could pass it. That's interesting. Okay. So that's the Rabbeinu Balchia. So Machlokas, Rabbeinu Balchia, and Ramban. Ramban says that it's for the menusa, the one being tested. He needs to be shown what he can do, what he's capable of, maybe for the future. Once he sees, you know what, I'm really capable of doing very well in this class, maybe later on he'll work harder, right? If I were to give my student who's not doing well and lacks confidence a test, and he does well, and again, we have to do it under the parameters that they're saying, it's someone who can pass. If he doesn't do well, then you're really in trouble. But assuming he passes, he say, well, you know what? You know, you can do well in this class, and suddenly that might jumpstart his whole year. At the same time, Rabbeinu Bachya wants to say different. He says, no, it's for everybody else, not just to push this person along a little bit further down the road and pass and do better in the future. It's for everybody else to be able to do better in the future. So that may be a more broad-minded approach. So that's an interesting machlokas. Now, let's go back into the book of Iyov for a minute. Why would Iyov be tested? So according to Ramban, you can already do this. I should give you a minute to do this yourself. According to Ramban, Iyov might be tested because Iyov needs to be shown who he is. Right? Okay. We know from the narrative. We know from the storyline that Hashem said he's a tzaddik, he's a tam, or he's a sur meirah, he's a yashar. I don't remember all the terms, but yeah, he's a great guy. But he may have lacked the confidence. He may have lacked the self knowledge of who he was to be able to say, you know what, I'm actually capable of doing more. So maybe that would push him, according to Ramban, that would push him further. According to Rabbeinu Bachya, that might be, this test might be in order to show everybody else, to give everybody else a kick in the pants and say, wow, you know, this guy Iyov, he was really able to do that. He was able to pass this test. Here this tzaddik lost everything. And he was still withstood, withheld his anger, withstood his frustration, and was able to come out ahead. So to everyone else, it's a test according to the Rabbeinu Bachya for the brios. Either way, right? Either it's most supposed to motivate him in the future to do better, even better, or it's supposed to motivate the brios, most motivate everyone else to do better themselves. Let's look now at the Gemara. Yeah, actually, I'll skip this Gemara for now. Let's go to source 14. Let's see we're going to go further in the Rabbeinu Bachya that we saw earlier. So keep in mind that we're going to see is actually according to his perspective, not according to Ramban's perspective. But let's see, we're going to zero in now on who exactly would be worthy of being tested. Two people are tzaddikim. Maybe one is a tzaddik who gets tested, one is a tzaddik who doesn't get tested. Right? Should I feel insulted that I don't get tested? What exactly might qualify a person as someone who should get tested? So, interesting perspective. He says, Da ki hanisayon ha-keida. This is the bottom of page 8, source 14. He says, you should know that the test of the akeida was the farsem ba'amim. Godel chiyuv hayirav ha'ava b'sham yisbar. Remember, there's no Jewish people yet. So, when you say brios, we mean the whole world, right? We mean everybody. That the purpose of the Nisayon was to publicize for the entire world, godel chiyuv hayirav ha'ava, that the extent of the obligation of loving Hashem. Everyone in the world had to know what the extent of the obligation is, to which point, to what extent a person has to both fear and love Hashem. And he says, Ki ha'ava al gimel chalokim. He says there are three kinds of love. I labeled these on the next page as talk, money, and life. And we'll see why I did that in a sec. Ha'echad ki misha oeves ha'melech. The first type of love. This is really an insightful comment by the Rabbeinu Bachya, I think. Misha oeves ha'melech mitoch ahava so yisaper b'shvachat. The first person talks. He says, wow, this is great. This is the best king ever. We have the best king. B'farsei ma'ilosav, and he publicizes how great this king is of his. Tamid kol ha'yom all day long. V'yedua l'chol esgivura. So he lets everyone know. But he doesn't actually contribute to the king's re-election campaign. But he likes to talk about how great the president is. But then when he gets a letter in the mail, we're all like this, many of us. We're all very happy to talk about Obama's great, Bush was great, everyone's got their opinion. But when it comes to actually getting that campaign letter in the mail and it's put up for shut-up time, practically nobody actually gives anything. A very small percentage of the population, all of whom either like the Republican candidate or like the Democratic candidate, almost nobody actually gives money. Second one, Hasheni, money, Misha Oevo So Yoser Minarisho. The second category of person who loves their king, their president, loves Hashem, loves even more than the first one, Yisaper Bishvachav, he also talks about how great the king is. The Yitain Kol Momono Bishvilo, and he gives all of his money to the king's re-election campaign, president's more likely re-election campaign. President kings don't really have re-election campaigns. Avalo yimsar atzmo lemisa mishvilo, but he wouldn't give up his life for him. Okay, so that's category two. He talks about the king, he gives his money, but if Bush comes to shove, he wouldn't actually give up his life for him. And then, of course, the third one, ashlishi mishoevo so yoser mishnehem, yisaper b'shvachav, yitin kol mamono b'shvilo, v'yimsar atzmo lemisa. The third category would actually give his life up for the king. Okay? And then he goes on to prove, which we'll see in a second, that Avram had all three levels. How did he have talk? Sipar b'shvachos, parsei melahuso, v'yichudo ba'olam. Avram used to go out. Rambam talks about this. He'd go out and he'd tell everybody. And Rambam in Mishneh Torah has a whole history of who Avram was and how he became who he became. And he went out and he told everybody about who Hashem was, beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah in the Rambam. And he really was, in many ways, the Torah doesn't go out of its way to stress this, for whatever reason. Hashem in his infinite wisdom decided that this should be more left to Torah Shebaal Peh. But according to Torah Shebaal Peh anyway, Avraham really was a kiruv worker par excellence, and he really went out there and publicized who Hashem was. So that's number one. Number two, money. Hasheni, Pizer Nosan Levyonim, he used to give money to poor people. He was the Balach Sanya, he had a hotel, as we know, his tent was open to anybody. And in that way, interesting perspective on what tzedakah is, by giving tzedakah, he showed his love for Hashem, because he did it as an obligation of his love for Hashem. He did it as a product, as a result of his love of Hashem. Interesting. Okay, and then his life, Hashalishi, Masar Atzmo Lemisa Bishvil Avas Hashem Kishet, Hushlach, Lekivshan, Ha'esh, Al-Kidush Hashem Isbach, that Hashem protected him when he was thrown into the fiery pit. Also Torah Shmalpeh, all three of these are actually, well, at least the first and third, Lefisha, Hesig Madrega Sa'ava, that since he reached these three levels of love, the other Al Gimel Achalakim Kar Hashem Isbach Avram Ohavi. That's why he's referred to as Avram Ohavi, Hashem Avram who loves me. What does love mean? It means all three levels. He talked about me. He gave his money for me, and he gave up his life for me. He was willing to give up his life for me, and so he was referred to as Avram Ohavi. That says the Rabbeinu Bachya is what made him uniquely capable, uniquely prepared to be a receptacle for the kind of test, right? That's how, if you use Rabbeinu Balkia's logic from before, that's how Hashem knew that he was such an Oev that he would pass the test, and it was worth it to give him the test as opposed to someone else from which everyone else could learn. As opposed, right, what's the three-part preparation test, the pretest to know who's really going to be good on the test, right? Think back to a game show when they have, remember when they wants to be a millionaire, I don't think it's still on. Jeopardy is the same way, right? They have pretests and they have auditions, and you pass one and the next, and they're slowly whittling it down, right? Why not just put three random people up there who they get off the street? Because they don't want it to be a boring show. Most likely, the three random guys they get off the street are going to do pretty poorly, right? They need to whittle down all these people who aren't prepared for the show, and then they'll get some of the three people who are. Right, so that's the same thing over here. How do we whittle down all of these people who might be tzaddikim, frankly, but who aren't really considered ohavi, and therefore not yet are ready to be worthy of being in this exalted state of being tested by Hashem? Well, it's talk, money, and life. That's really what it's all about. Talk, money, and life. You talk about Hashem all the time, you give up all your money for Him, and you give up your life for Him, you will be not only a tzaddik, because there are many tzaddikim, but a tzaddik who deserves to be tested. Which fits with what Rabbeinu Balkia said before. Right? Rabbeinu Balkia said it's to test everyone else. So there's no, we're afraid to put him up there in the winner's circle, put him up there on the game show, and prove to everyone else what can be done if he hasn't really proven beforehand that he is someone who can do anything. He has to go through all types of testing first. So, in a sense, the game is rigged, right? It isn't random. It isn't random, as we said at the beginning of today. Well, it seems random. It's not random. It's not random, because the only people who are going to get tested, according to the Rabbeinu Bachya, and to some extent according to Ramban, are people who have already proven themselves to be people who can pass the test. Because if you're not someone who can pass the test, if we aren't really confident you can pass the test, you're not going to do anything for us. If we're pretty sure that you're going to get up there on the game and fizzle out and not do very well, you're not going to do anything for us. You're not going to generate any advertising revenue, because you're going to make the show a stinker and no one's going to watch. Right? We need to put people up there who are going to be competitive. There's no reason to field a team if we don't think there's some chance of winning. Otherwise, people won't come to the games and we won't get any money. Right? So we want to field a team that we have some reason to believe we have confidence is going to do well. And here as well, we only put a tzaddik through the ringer, through a test, once we have some reason to believe that they are going to pass the test. I want to look, and this you'll have to open your Tanakh, but I want to look at Perek Hey Pasuk Dalet for each of these four friends of Eov that we're discussing. Eliphaz, who we're doing now, Bildad and Sofar, who we'll get to in the future weeks, Elihu, we'll see at the end, Each of them has a perspective of Tzadik Ferala, which is what we just saw for Eliphaz. Why would a righteous person suffer? And we also have to answer the other question, the opposite question, of Rasha V'Tovlo. Of why would a Rasha, why would a wicked person prosper, seem to prosper? So nothing we've said yet seems to prove that, seems to answer that. Nothing we've said from the Rabban or the Rabbeinu Bachya would seem to answer why wicked people prosper. I understand now two perspectives, similar perspectives, on why a tzaddik would seem to suffer, because really it's a test for himself, or it's a test for everyone else. And we talked about why only him, and how he gets to that level. Okay, but none of that shows me why a wicked person would seem to prosper. Now, it's interesting, they all give their answers to this, and we'll see each of their answers. It doesn't seem to necessarily be as relevant to the book. And Ramban addresses that in his Perush. Ramban actually says that it isn't really relevant to the book, and he shows that throughout Tanakh, in Yirmiyahu and elsewhere, one of the Treyastar, I think he says Habakkuk, the question of Tzadik Viralo seems to be more present on people's minds than Rasha V'Tovlo. But nevertheless, he says, since we're dealing with one, we deal with the other. But it is interesting that they deal with this. Ramban, I should point out, I meant to say this the first week of the class, you won't find the Ramban's Perush on Iyov in a standard Mikraot Gedolo, any of them, as far as I have found so far. You'll only find it in the Kisvei Ramban. In the Kisvei Ramban, his collected writings, volume 1, at the beginning of the first volume, you'll find his Perush. Beautiful Perush, Pasuk by Pasuk, really very, very nice. It's a shame it's not in the in the Kisvei Ramban, because it's a very, very special and beautiful parish, highly recommended. If you really want to go through Eov carefully, pasuk by pasuk, I would recommend that you get your hands on that. If you're living in Denver, you won't find it at Eidos, but you will find it in the personal collection of Rabbi Gittler, who lent it to me, because I don't have one either. So if you don't have one, you can ask Rabbi Gittler. I'm sure he'll be happy to lend it to you. Okay. So let's look at the Pasuk, Perek Hey Pasuk Dalet for a minute, in order to gain Eliphaz's perspective on Rasha V'Tovlo. Okay, so yeah, let's look at Perek Hey Pasuk, actually Pasuk Gimel. It says, Ani Ra'isi Avil Mashrish. He says, I too, like you, I've seen sinners, fools, who seemed rooted, Shoresh, who seemed to be rooted, meaning seemed to be grounded, seemed to have everything going for them, they seemed to have what they needed, everything seemed to be fine, but their dwelling became disintegrated, it became destroyed suddenly, pisom, right? Everything seemed to be going well, and then all of a sudden, everything went awry. How so? He goes on to say, Pasuk Dalet, Yirchaku banav miyesha, his children are far from salvation. Vidaku vashar ve'ein matzil. And they cry out at the gate and no one answers them. No one will save them. Right, so how is it that a Rasha can seem to be prospering or can prosper? He's not prospering because his children, who of course are very dear to him, will actually bear the brunt of his own sinning. Ki lo yetzei me'afar aven u'me'adam. Sorry, Pasuk K. I skipped Pasuk. Asher kitsiro ra'ev yochel v'yel metzinim yikachehu v'sha'af tzamim chelam ki lo yetzi me'ofer oven u'me'adamo lo yitzmach omol. Right? The evil will not last. Evil will not... seems to be lasting. It looks like the evil person is doing well, but in the end, it never lasts very long. Ki adam la'amal yulad. Okay, then he goes on. But his basic point here is, especially what you see here in Pasuk Gimel, Dalet, that a tzaddik, a Rasha who seems to be prospering, basically his advice to you, Eliphaz's advice to you is wait, right? You're either going to see him disintegrate, this Rasha himself, or you're going to see his children disintegrate. But one way or another, if you wait it far enough in history, you're going to see his, Bildad actually gets into his grandchildren. He says his children himself, right, which is somewhat satisfying. It's probably the most difficult of the answers that we'll see as far as Rasha V'Tovlo, because times. First of all, it's the hardest one to prove, because I've seen many Rishayim whose children do okay. So it's, you know, not necessarily the easiest one to prove. And second of all, it's not necessarily satisfying, because it still doesn't answer for the guy himself. Okay, so my children, fine, but if I knew that I could get through this life, and my children, all right, if I'm a Rasha anyway, I may not care about my children. I guess I'm not a Rasha, I do care about my children. A Rishayim might not care about their children, so it's not necessarily the best answer. So we'll see in future weeks. We won't dwell on this. Bildad will advance it a few generations. He'll kick it down the road a little bit. Well, his grandchildren, great-grandchildren, which helps one problem, because then it's harder to harder to disprove, easier to prove, because you say, well, if you wait long enough, you'll see it, as opposed to saying his children. So, and also it'll be a little, well, that makes it maybe even less satisfying as far as him himself, because we want the Rasha to suffer, not his great-great-grandchildren. But anyway, Eliphaz's perspective over here in Parakeh is that his children will suffer, and that is, of course, that is very damaging to him as well. Okay, so that takes care of Eliphaz. So tzaddik v'ralo, why would a righteous person suffer? It's because of nisayon. We saw a number of possibilities of what that exactly means. Why would somebody be tested? And why would a rasha prosper? Rasha v'tovlo would be because of, really, they look like they're prospering, and they might be prospering. Can't say they're not. But on the other hand, their children won't. And that is something that would be a problem for them as well. Okay, let's start Bildad. We'll do a little bit of Bildad, and then we'll continue Bildad next week. We'll start Bildad. Bildad, his answer, which we have in Perek Hey, Perek Ches, he gives an interesting analogy. Let's look at Perek Ches. It's on the sheets. It's on your sheets on page 10, the top of page 10, source 15. It's also in Eov, if you want to open the Tanakh. Perek Ches, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Let's at least see these psukim, and we'll raise some questions, and then we'll go on next week. But he says, Hayig ego me belibitza. Can a reed grow without suffering? Yisge achu belimayim. Nothing in this world comes, says Bildad, without suffering. Nothing good, nothing worthwhile comes without work, without pain. There's nothing in this world, Bildad says, that doesn't come through pain, through suffering, through difficulty, right? The reed only grows by being in a swamp. Bitza is a swamp. How you get going, believe Bitza, would a reed grow without being in a swamp? It needs to be in a terrible situation in order to attain the ultimate success that it will. It can't grow any other way. You put it in a nice tropical climate, and it's not going to grow. It needs to be there, even though it might not be pleasant for it at the time. That's an interesting perspective. That nothing in this world, right, no pain, no gain. You can call this the no pain, no gain answer. Nothing in this world comes without effort, nothing comes without toil. There's nothing worthwhile that you can ever get that doesn't come from a lot of work. So he says in Pasuk Yud Gimel that so too is the way of everybody who forgets Hashem, and someone whose hope they give up on will perish, will not last. Right? Somebody who doesn't appreciate the test they're being given, doesn't appreciate the swamps, you know, to put it back into his analogy, who doesn't appreciate the difficulty that they're given, will ultimately pay the price for that. And we have a similar pasuk here, source 16 on page 10, from Tehillim. Sounds a lot like what we just said. Ashrei hagever asher tiyasrenu ka. Praiseworthy, happy is the man who Hashem gives pain to, gives difficult, gives yisurin to. Umiteras chaslam denu. That person will be able to learn from the Torah. Excuse me. So this is the argument of yisurim shalava. We've spoken about yisurim shalava. We'll see a lot more about it next week. But Yisurim Shalava, we've spoken about. It's the fact that Hashem might put you through a difficult situation in order to give you an ultimately positive outcome. It sounds a little like Nisayon, and actually the Ramban and others do make this kind of a subcategory of Nisayon. You could look at it that way, or you could look at it as saying it's different, but there's definitely some difference to it. When you deal with Nisayon, you're dealing with an open-ended test that you could theoretically fail. A person could choose to pass it, a good person could choose not to. Ultimately, you have your Bechira. It's not very likely that you will, but you can't. He's not going to take away your Bechira. Yisurim, you don't have that choice, right? So this sounds a little bit more like Yisurim, what Eov went through, than Nisayon. He never had the chance to say, wait a minute, I don't want this. So we have to talk, maybe we'll see you next week, why Hashem would give someone Yisurim versus a test. Because a test, you know, you could theoretically not pass. So maybe you'd give Yisurim to somebody who you don't have as much faith in. Maybe that, you know, have to see why someone would get a Nisayon and someone would get Yisurim. Because Yisurim, you don't have a choice not to pass. It's given to you. It's finished. It's already at your door, right? Hashem didn't say, why don't you bring your children up and offer them as a sacrifice? He just took them, right? To use the Akedah example for Eov isn't totally correct. Because Hashem never said to Eov, you know what, why don't you take your kids up and offer them to me as a sacrifice? He just took them away from him. He just gave him pain, gave him boils. So that's a difficult thing to understand. So they're a little bit different. One more pasuk here in Mishlei, source 17, Perek Gimel, pasuk Yud Beis, Ki es asher ye'ahav Hashem yochiach. The person who Hashem loves, he gives tochacha to, he gives admonition to. Uche'av es ben yirteh, like a father would give Yisurim to his son, right? A father might give his son a difficult situation in order to give him ultimate good at the end. Right, I want you to receive a reward for cleaning your room, so clean your room. Right? Why not just give him the reward if you want to give him the reward? Because you don't really just want to give him the reward. You want to give him the experience of having cleaned his room where he'll learn something from that, you think, and then give him the reward after that. You want two things. You want him to clean his room and learn from that experience, and you also want him to receive the reward afterwards. If you really did just want him to receive the reward, you could give it to him, and Hashem does that sometimes. But in this case, he's giving this tzaddik, we'll see one of this Rashi here on that pasuk in Mishlei. Sharotze bivno. Oh, he explains the analogy to a son and the father from the Hashem. Rotze bivno lehetiv lo. A father by nature wants his son to have something good. A person loves his son. Bifaisehu laachar shemakehu b'shevet. Right, after a person hits their son, after they punish them, they also appease them. The same father who who hits their son, who punishes their son, might turn right around after and try and make the pain go away. And it seems paradoxical, it seems counterintuitive, but it's not. Because ultimately they want them to learn from the punishment, as we said, and we also want them to not be, in pain forever. Once they've learned about it, we want them to get the reward that comes from the appeasement that comes afterwards. Kein yerav l'cha tova achar maga. So Hashem as well might do that with Yisurim Shalava. So we'll talk more next week about Yisurim Shalava. You have Psukim here at the beginning of the packet, by the way, on page, in case you haven't noticed, page 3 of the packet. It gives some Psukim to look at to prepare, so you can prepare, what does it say here? Bildad, so Perikhes, Yudhes, Tes, Yudalad, they give some psukim there you can look at if you want to prepare for next week, or you can look over the sources that we have here as well. Okay, thanks.